You're listening to Cadence, a podcast for creatives. I'm Hafsa.
And I'm Yen.
And if you're new to the podcast, Cadence is a conversation around topics that we wish we'd been more informed on when we started out in our career paths. The hope is to arm you, the listener, with some takes and tips that might be of service as you venture out on your own unique path, and also just to have a fun conversation with friends. And we're here in a brand new podcast studio, Fifth Avenue Studios by AADL. It's eerily quiet in here.
It's vastly different, people. I can't begin to tell you.
It's really nice in here. We couldn't be happier to have Fifth Avenue Studios on board as our production host and just support as we produce this podcast. I'm really excited to record season two here.
Definitely. And we are so grateful to our dear friend Juliet, who has just continued to usher in all these opportunities for us, introduced us to Rich and Matt, and then in turn introduced us to Tyler, who let us in today so graciously. And it is just an awesome resource.
It really is. And I think for anybody who might be interested in spinning up a podcast of their own, I know Fifth Avenue Studios has a lot of resources, both on their website and also if you just come in and talk to folks like Matt and Tyler, they'll be super happy to kind of help walk you through what it takes to set up your own podcast from production to recording to post-production and all of that good stuff. So we would highly recommend reaching out.
Yeah, we should probably put a link on the website. Yeah, we'll do that for you. Yep, for sure.
Absolutely.
Oh, goodness. We did a whole season. There's a season behind us.
There is.
And
yes.
now that I'm thinking about it, though, the highlights for me were really just the different personalities that we had on.
Absolutely.
And then all the incredible nuggets of wisdom that they bestowed on us. I felt like I was learning every single time.
I always learn something new. And I think those are sort of my favorite experiences when like you meet new people, you make new friends, and you're learning from them. It's not just a take. It's like a take and a give. You know, they share something different and you share your perspective, they share their perspective, and you know, you have that. What's that gif of the brain expanding, you know?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, there were some moments where I just I could see the mind blown emoji in my head,
exactly.
Where I just thought I hadn't thought of it that way before.
Absolutely. And I think season two, I'm really excited about. So we're gonna have 7 guests in season two, and we'll just do a pause in case it is 7 guests, right? I can always cut it out.
Yeah. I wasn't going to count, but
okay,
I'm trusting that it's 7 guests.
It's 7 guests. All right. We'll just say. So I'm really excited about our lineup of guests for season two. What we wanted to do with this season, maybe, Yen, do you want to kind of chat us through it, where it's like we really wanted to dig into the nitty gritty. I think, you know, season one was a little bit more about the tactical bits, right? The labors and the leisures that, you know, get us to where we are and kind of help us to grow in our craft. But season two,
we thought it would be really helpful because think about career day. A professional comes in, they talk in front of a classroom. You're like, okay, I have a vague idea of what you just explained to me, but how do you actually do it? What do you do when you wake up in the morning? What does a typical day, what does an atypical day look like? What does it feel like? What is the software, hardware? What are the ins and outs, the difficulties? How do you actually do the job? So on today's episode, Hafsa and I are going to talk about that exact thing. What does our workspace look like? What is the flow or rhythm of the day, the week, the month? And then how are we invoicing and following up with clients? Like, we're going to tell you how to do it and how other people do it, because there are all these, they're like the non-Halloween costume jobs that we've never heard of.
Yes.
And it's possible to make a living that way. So if we can impart anything this season, it's that you could do these jobs. If there is an inkling of interest, it is possible for you.
I think I always babble about this when we talk about, you know, anything on this podcast, but I wish I'd had something like this when I was in school, or even when I was just, you know, kind of exploring, you know, what I wanted to do, whether it was design. I had a brief moment where I wanted to be like a biochemist. I really loved biology.
Ooh.
So I was a little bit of a nerd about that. But, you know, it's those sort of moments when you're younger and when, you know, you're kind of just forming that vision of the person that you want to be as an adult. And I think having, you know, things like this, you know, listening to older people or to your peers talk about things that you're interested in would have been so helpful back then. So I hope that this is, you know, kind of filling a little bit of that gap for somebody out there.
Me too. I realized that I had always had this idea of what it would be like to wait tables. I could do that. I could bring you a drink. I could bring you a dish. I remember the first day I got a job as a server, I thought, am I supposed to hold the tray? Am I supposed to walk out? I had no idea where to start.
Yeah.
And you think you know, and then you get there and you're like, am I standing? Am I sitting?
Right.
Am I smiling? It just
changes everything.
It changes. The real life experience is so important. Mm-hmm. And if you could close your eyes and listen today and we could walk you through that scenario, maybe it'll just be 1% less scary.
Exactly.
That's what I hope for.
I love that. I love that. So with that, why don't we get into the job?
Hafsa, you get to go first.
Oh boy, I get to go first. I mean, yeah. I'm looking at my notes and I have all of these little, you know, sort of babbling notes about this is what a day in my life looks like. I'm a disaster. It's fine. But I mean, to be honest, I think my work process has evolved quite a bit over time. And mm-hmm. that kind of is a result of, you know, my career evolving over time. So I started out just as a design freelancer, kind of literally figuring out what I was doing and, you know, finding clients, building up my portfolio, trying to get to a place where I could eventually, you know, apply to the jobs that I really, really wanted and have a little bit more of a salary versus being sort of self-managed. So my workflow has evolved in accordance to, you know, what my life looked like at the time. So what I'm going to describe is really what I do now, which is working as a creative within the tech industry. So I work at a cybersecurity company. We are a small but scrappy creative team within a marketing organization, and we're responsible for, you know, all of the majority of the creative output of our organization. And so what that means is, like, we have a senior graphic designer. We have a creative director. We'll be speaking with one of those in the season. And then myself as a motion designer, and I'm a little bit multidisciplinary, so I'm able to support both the graphic designer with stuff like, you know, print materials and, oh, we have an event. We have to design a video for the booth. I'll design the video. I might also contribute, you know, swag or, you know, designed pieces that will be in and around the event or during the time of the event. And so it's kind of a multi-layered job, and the way that I try to work, I'll try to walk through what, you know, at least a week looks like, because every day might be a little bit different. But, you know, in general, you know, I'm waking up, I need my coffee, I do need my caffeine. This is, you know, how I start every day. That's my tactical piece is the caffeine. And I'm fully remote. I should mention that. I did used to work in an office. I, you know, 9 to 5, I'd come into the office at 9 and leave around 5, but now it's all fully remote. And so my work hours, I try to keep them consistent. So I wake up sometime around, you know, between like 7:45, 8, you know, I kind of get my me stuff out of the way. Get my coffee done. Around 9 p.m., I'm on my laptop, and the day is often just within Slack. So it's, you know, so Slack is a communication tool that is used in a lot of businesses, a lot of both nonprofits, profits, corporate organizations. It's just basically like a big chat server for your colleagues, so you can talk with your colleagues, you know, that are remotely dispersed. So I'll kind of check in. We have a bunch of different channels that are set up for, you know, different teams. Some are more public, some are more private. My specific team has a kickoff that happens on Monday. So it's, you know, me, my immediate team, and then also our amazing project manager. Without her, the whole thing would just crumble into little pieces. And she helps us to walk through our project management board. So she has managed a dashboard. So the product is called ClickUp. It's like a project management software, similar to like Asana or, you know, something like that. And so all of our, you know, tasks for the week and beyond are listed within ClickUp. And so we kind of have to go through and say, oh, yeah, we have this coming up. Who's going to be assigned to that? Do we have bandwidth for this? Just kind of those, all the logistical pieces of our work week take place within ClickUp. It's also where a lot of our communication happens. So a lot of what we do as a team and what I do just on the day-to-day in my job is just communication. And I think this is something, you know, if you're in a graphic design program or advertising design or any kind of, you know, sort of design program, something you might not realize, or maybe you already do going through your studies, is that a lot of what design has to do with is just communication. Mm-hmm. It's that, you know, sort of connecting with the client, whoever the client may be. And in our case, our clients, air quote, I'm putting air quotes in the air. Our clients are internal. So they're more like stakeholders.
Right.
So somebody might submit, let's say, a request for, we need a data sheet. And so a data sheet is like this kind of a document that, you know, goes through all the nitty gritty of the product. It's customer facing. So it's something the customer would be, you know, reading and referencing when they're chatting with our sales team. And so, you know, that request comes in, and as creatives, we then go, okay, we need to understand what the context of this item is. Who's going to be the audience for it, right? It's like, okay, the customer is going to be the end audience for that. What is the nature of the content? Is the content done? Sometimes the content is not done. People will send you like an idea, like, oh, here's the request, but the content's not ready yet. We can't do much with that, right? Because we need to have actual content to work with to put it into a design. So, you know, we start to tease out a lot of information before we even get into, you know, InDesign or Illustrator or Photoshop or whatever it is. Like, we have to have context around a project first before we, you know, move into production. And once we get into production, you know, then that becomes a little bit more of like, okay, we're adhering to, you know, our own brand standards. We want to make sure that aesthetically it looks good. Occasionally we might make recommendations of like, oh, there's too much copy here, or like this just, it's a lot. Like, from a sort of a user experience perspective, we try to help our stakeholders to understand this is what will make this deliverable the most effective thing that it can be for your goals. And so, I mean, what I'm kind of describing is very tactical, but in honesty, it's what a lot of my workday is. It's just, you know, sort of trying to understand what my colleagues around the organization are trying to achieve, how it can support the goals of our business, and how we can make sure that it looks good and is on brand and makes, helps people to be aware of what our organization is and what we do. And so I, you know, one of my notes here too is, you know, my daily work kind of oscillates between working on tasks that have been assigned, and then organizing my thoughts and processes. So kind of an example of that too is a work project that I've been on where we're trying to develop an internal video series that will feature some of our, you know, very cool colleagues who work in this in super technical space, and we want to help establish them as thought leaders. Both for our company and just for security practitioners around the industry. And so my job then becomes more of a storyteller's job because, you know, we have this goal, right? We want to establish our colleagues as thought leaders. What's the story around that? What does that look like as a series? What's the log line? Who's the who's the audience? What are the episodes? You know, I think those are kind of things that are often very abstract. And so part of my job is really to, you know, just get my thoughts out on digital paper, so to speak. So I'll be using a lot of Google Docs. I put together a lot of decks and do a lot of presenting to, you know, both my boss to make sure like he's on board. If he has suggestions and recommendations, those are accounted for. I'll bring the deck to other people and share it with them, give them more context. We have more conversations and we really kind of dial things down into something that, you know, is easy to pitch. It becomes a story pitch. We're going to do this. It's going to look like this. And we're going to put it on YouTube and it's going to be fantastic. And again, that's more abstract work. It's not necessarily, you know, the pushing pixel stuff. It really is, you know, the writing, the thinking about, you know, what the structure, what the fundamental structure of something is going to be before you actually go into production.
Quietly.
Yes. Yeah. So that's a lot of and you're smiling at me. Does this? I'm just curious if this like is ringing any bells for you, or if like you have questions. Because I always feel like when I describe my work, it sounds maybe not like what someone would expect, you know, a motion designer's job to be, but. I don't know. It fluctuates, right? But like you could talk to somebody who's working, you know, say at Pixar or Disney or something, in like a fast paced kind of agency production environment, and they would have a completely different, you know, story to tell you. But there might be some crossover. But I'm just curious what you think.
Well, one of the first things I wondered when we first started talking and hanging out was everybody has a sense of what a graphic designer is.
Yeah.
Everybody. I'd say a lot of people ask me, oh, you're a graphic designer. And I say, actually, no, I'm not. But to understand what motion designer is, what classes or at what moment during your education did it click? Did motion designer click with you? And what did that mean versus graphic design skills that you had learned first?
That's a really good question. So I would say I can remember the immediate moment that it kind of clicked, and I was still actually in school studying motion design and graphic design. So I had gotten a gig while I was in school. I had been recommended to a local agency, and basically they wanted an explainer video, and I had no idea what an explainer video was at the time. I was just like, sure, I'll make something for you. Are you paying money? Is this for cash? But then also, like, it's literally good experience, because I'd never, you know, outside of a class setting and having homework assigned, I hadn't had that experience of somebody asking me to produce something for them. And so it ended up being, you know, literally an explainer. I had to illustrate it from start to finish. I was using like their brand assets and their colors and things like that, but I got to make the storyboards myself, which was like, oh, I get to do, you know, I get to use my graphic design sensibility here and kind of guide the visual look and feel of this. Oh, and then I also get to animate it. And that was my first, you know, kind of experience animating for somebody who wasn't my instructor. And I remember I was a TA for one of my instructor's classes, and I was sitting there kind of doing my animation, and I was asking him some questions, and he was, you know, kind of giving me all this feedback and saying, yeah, this is great, this is cool, you could do this, here's some suggestions. And I think that was like, I can think of that moment as being the time where I was like, oh, I could do this and get paid. I can do this consistently. I get to do multiple things that I enjoy, which is being a digital illustrator, using my graphic design know-how, and I can, you know, make it move. And I really enjoy making, you know, things that I draw move. Like, this is, it feels very rewarding and very satisfying. And yeah, that was a cool moment, because I think after that, like, I started to do things just for fun, you know, kind of on my own outside of class. And those like little mini projects, I did kind of use those to help me eventually get, you know, some of the jobs that I had afterward. And I still had a hard time calling myself a motion designer, because I didn't really know what the term meant. Like, it's very vague, you know. It's like animator. You know what that means, right?
Everybody knows what animator means.
Exactly. Yes. And motion is just, it's so abstract. So I end up kind of explaining it a lot. But it kind of makes sense, really, for who I am, because I'm not a traditional animator. Like, I don't do like traditional hand-drawn frame by frame with all of the tweening. Like, I consider that, you know, again, air quotes, real animation, because it's a different, it's such a different realm and a different way of thinking.
The application is so different
application, and so much attention. It's a different type of attention to detail, and it's always beautiful work. And I think for me, it's 2D motion design is where, you know, it's that convergence of graphic design and traditional animation. So it's where I'm able to take whatever I'm doing in Photoshop and Illustrator, I pull it into After Effects. I use the same principles that a traditional animator would use, but the aesthetic is a little bit different. And I'm sure if I tried to learn traditional animation, I could probably
rock at it, Hafsa.
But yeah. Does that kind of help give context to that question?
Okay. It really does. And when you said, after doing that gig, that it helped you to do more work on your own. I think that's when it becomes solidified in someone's mind that if you enjoy doing it on the off time when you're not getting paid, it means that you really care about that craft. So how often are you working after work hours?
More than I probably should, to be honest. But yeah, sometimes of my own volition, sometimes not. If it's for a gig, you know, it depends. Sometimes I'm working with folks on the West Coast. So by virtue of that, my day gets staggered out a little bit. I will say I'm a bit of a night owl. So I sort of naturally am at like at my peak creativity between like, say like 6 p.m. and 7, 6 and 8, maybe 6 and 9. But that's not all the time. I really do. What I've personally been trying to do is being more disciplined about how I spend, you know, my work time versus my fun time that might look like work. But, you know, it's I'm enjoying it. I'm doing something that I enjoy, like putting together a podcast or, you know, a website or something like that.
Something leisurely. Something like leisurely. Producing a podcast.
It totally is. Listen. That's how my mind works. And then also just like the fun stuff. So like I won't talk about my motorcycle too much because I keep talking about
that. You could talk about your motorcycle because the other day when you were riding off and I was like, Ty, look at what a badass Hafsa. I literally said, look at Hafsa. Look at what a badass she is at the stop sign. We were pulling out. I mean, I was just really in awe.
Just sitting in. Well, I mean, it's my therapist on wheels. So that's what I always call it. I should have a real therapist too. But I think, you know, with the motorcycle, it's a hobby. And like, it's something that it's completely extricated from work, right? I can get on my bike and, you know, I hear the sound. I'm like, all right, let's go. I got to be focused. I'm going to go have some fun. I'm going to go ride around. And I don't have to think about literally anything else besides what I'm doing at that moment. And you have to have those things that you do, right? That help you to kind of delineate your work time from your leisure time. So
that's such a great reminder. I'm just going to stick with my therapist until I figure out my therapy on wheels.
Okay. Anytime. Just let me know.
Okay.
And I want to know about your day to day because I've always been fascinated by this term graphic recorder. And I know what you do, but I want to hear like what it's all about.
Yeah, I'm in my 13th year as a graphic recorder. Oh, goodness. Graphic recorder, graphic facilitator, live scriber, digital illustrator. I'm hashtagging all of those when I'm posting things. I fell into this work when my dear friend and career specialist at Stamps called me one day and said, have you ever heard of this job? And I said, no, I have no idea what that is. And he said, I think you'd be good at it. And I think you should do one for Michigan Medicine. And I braced myself and I came up with an hourly figure and I went and did the work and it wasn't that bad. It was on whiteboards back then. And I did mind mapping and bubbles and did all the drawings and I did it for 9 hours and I was spent. I was mentally, physically, emotionally spent by the end of it. It was a really long retreat for this group. And I thought, okay, I think I can do this again. And the work was really sporadic back then. It was on whiteboard or I was lugging around a large roll of paper. I had markers. Sometimes the dry erase boards were greasy from everybody's hand oils. And I was like, this isn't working. And I wasn't making a full-time living at it. And I'd say the first 7-8 years, it was pretty challenging. I was bootlegging my way through graphic design. I am not a graphic designer. People still ask me for logos and I'm like, I can draw you something. Please leave the graphic design to the experts, aka Nat Yen. So my typical day is really if I'm not Zooming, then I am illustrating something for someone that's a commission, or I'd say about half the time I'm traveling. So my work is very much wake up in the morning, get my morning routine, which is, yes, the coffee.
That's right. Yes.
A workout, time for myself, want to get the things out of my way that can allow me to think calmly and in a quiet mind, I'd say. And I start with each client with a discovery meeting. And I'd say that 99% of the time, that's still on Zoom. Occasionally, I will have a client that just wants to do a phone call, and that's fine. That also gives me a little bit of a, I wouldn't say a red flag, but just a heads up that this person does not have the time ability to do a Zoom. And sometimes that means that we might just do two phone calls before I jump into a project.
Gotcha.
If it's a graphic recording project, I am trying to understand the location, the audience size. I want to know if I'm walking into a conference hall with 2,000 people or a small executive meeting with 20 people. I want to understand what the technicals are going to look like. I draw on an iPad with an Apple Pencil and I use Procreate software. And if it works, then I should just have my Apple dongle, which goes to a Lightning C to the HDMI. Mm-hmm. So your HDMI adapter plugs directly into a TV or a screen.
Okay.
If you want to do it through a projector, you need a different kind of dongle, which I've also done. And the most important thing, because I'm doing everything on the fly, I'm drawing what people are saying in real time. The most important thing that people don't understand, and I try to iterate this over and over again, is the timing and duration. I need to know if you're going to talk for an hour. And I need to know if for some reason your talk gets cut to 20 minutes. Because if you could imagine an illustration being done in an hour,
right,
if you only do 20 minutes, then you're only going to get 1/3 of the illustration content, because I didn't know that the other 40 minutes was going to be empty.
Gotcha.
Right. Yeah. So if I'm drawing, there's so much spatial planning that I'm doing on the iPad. I have to know how much time. If I know that it's 20 minutes, I'm going to draw bigger. I'm going to write bigger. I'm going to make the template bigger. Or the template titling, the date, all of that logo stuff bigger. It's so much of it is logistical. Order for me to understand, like you were talking about the communication piece, that data sheet.
Yeah.
I have my own data sheet. Right. Like I have to know all of these things in order for the graphic recording to look right.
Yeah.
And I'd say that 90% of my business now is all word of mouth or referral, or I go to an event and then that gets another client and it begets more and more. And we had talked about talking about taxes and agreements all that. I will post an agreement on this this webpage. I'll have a link up for everybody to look at, but I'm going to post a big disclaimer of my own. You got to talk to a lawyer or a lawyer friend, or know what your legalities are in your state.
Right.
We do not dole out legal advice whatsoever.
No.
But it is so important to have an agreement in place, because what were we talking about the other day? You were talking about,
was it like contracts or
the something creep?
Oh, scope creep.
Scope creep.
Yes.
I love that.
Scope creep. It's real.
I mean, scope creep. I never thought about it. And well, you don't think about it until you run into it. Somebody that wants to overstep boundaries, take up more time, get you to do more services. Mm-hmm. The job is done. And people have come back and said, could you redo this entire thing? Talk about creep.
Definitely.
So, yes, there's the agreement. We'll have that online. I always put the scope of the work, the proposal that I send to the client after we've talked the first time, I lay out everything they get. What is the objective of this project? What kind of files are they getting? What are the technicals I need? I put that all into a FreshBooks proposal. That's FreshBooks.com. And in that, I also include samples that are closest to the project that we're working on. And I also, in the email, I also bullet list again, this is what I need. I need a table, a chair, a wall plug-in, Wi-Fi, HDMI cord, all of that. I arrive 30 minutes before the event starts, minimally.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know where the bathroom is, where the water, the drinks, the snacks, what's being served for food that day.
Just scoping everything out.
I want to get a feel for everything. I want to sit in the spot for at least 15 minutes before the event starts. Mm-hmm. I want the client to see that I'm there after I've already greeted them as soon as I've walked through the door. And then the energy starts. Like people are usually clapping or they're excited or they're getting down to business if it's a small group work. And I'd say 75% of the time I'm plugged in. So if I'm drawing, they see what I'm drawing. If I'm misspelling that word, they see me misspell that word and I'm backtracking in real time.
Sure.
But yeah, I will do, I could do a 1 hour event. I have traveled for 1 hour events. I have traveled for multi-day, full day, 8 to 9 hour events. Those are really long days. And I'm typically checking into a hotel. I'm managing, like, where am I stashing my carry-on? Which bag am I bringing that carries my laptop, my iPad, all of the technical stuff I need? And then after the event is over, I have started offering this, and I don't know anybody else that's offering it. And now I hope everybody doesn't jump on the bandwagon.
Uh-oh.
But I work in a space that is only accessible to people that can see.
Mm.
And I've done this for so many years, and I never thought about this is not accessible at all to people that are visually impaired or blind. So what I started doing this year for clients is immediately following the day, I go back to my hotel room and I transcribe everything that's in each graphic recording.
That's so cool. Yeah.
So I will write down what the drawing is, what the text is, and I'll do that graphic recording by recording. And then they can copy and paste that into the caption area. So wherever they're leasing that JPEG or that MP4, if somebody is visually impaired, they can mouse over that and that'll read the caption area.
That's fantastic.
And I hope that offers a little bit more of accessibility because I thought I'm really not serving all people.
Sure. Well, and I think thinking in that way is so great because it's showing that you're really aware of your audience, right? Like not everybody is, you know, has perfect vision or can see it all or, you know, is able to, you know, just kind of make out what you're drawing and things like that. So having that extra layer of being like, oh, is my artwork, is this, you know, thing that is intended to communicate actually communicating to everybody that it needs to communicate to. So I love that approach.
Yeah. And then understanding everybody's access needs. Some people are not visual learners.
Yeah, exactly.
They just aren't.
Yeah.
Another thing that I've started doing is rewriting all the text in my recordings in other languages.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah. So that was really, it's, so much learning and patience. Mm-hmm. And I love knowing that more people can look at this work.
Quick software question for the transcription part. What are you using to transcribe?
My good old brain.
The brain?
I just open up a doc.
Okay.
Because I use Dropbox, I open up what they have called a paper doc in there, a Dropbox paper doc.
Okay.
And I just go line, I go to left to right, and I describe, I write image, parent walking with child, text. Support a family starts at an early age. Literally transcribe what I've drawn and then what I wrote in text. If you look at a JPEG or PDF, everything's flattened.
Yeah.
There's no information there.
Yeah.
And I think that and especially for clients, it's like an education. It's teaching them what's available.
Yeah.
They have
to
understand you can't parse any information from that flattened file.
Right.
So hopefully that's been a nice add-on service that I do. And then at the end, I am invoicing and I invoice within 48 hours.
Okay, nice.
Yeah. Because I put a 30-day net.
Sure.
And some people, I have clients, if it's due August 19th, they will send a check out August 19th.
Oh boy.
And then
So
you're not getting paid until a month out. And then worst case scenario, you don't get paid.
Right.
That's a whole other episode. And then best case scenario, I have clients that have paid before the job. And that always makes me nervous. I'm like, what if I got sick or I threw up or something happened and I couldn't do the job in the middle of the day? But the best case scenario and the feeling is like a client where they've never used a graphic recorder before. This happened recently where I went out for this this psychologist who was releasing a book launch. Beautiful event, lovely people, great support staff. I got back to my hotel room. We exchanged some very pleasant text messages. I got home. the next day and she had paid me already.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
And it's like, oh my gosh, I live for jobs like that where you just connect with the person. Yeah. And then they're just awesome. So timely and thoughtful. Like she had dozens of people that she was working with, vendors. I'm talking like food, wine, like all these people, her doing this by herself. And then to come home and get this email that she had paid my fee, I was just like, she was thinking of me.
Yeah.
And that makes all of this work worth it. Not the money part. That's a perk. But just to know that I connected with someone so deeply that I'm going to look at our selfie together and smile every time I think of her. I'm going to do the workbook that she launched. Like, it's just so, so impactful. And then I use paperless post for a thank you.
Okay.
Since COVID and then doing a lot of work over Zoom, if I'm in person doing a multi-day event, I will go and buy a box of chocolates if I know that the client would like something like that, or I'll buy like a small, like a gift that's specific to that place.
Yeah.
But at the very least, I always close out with a paperless post thank you card, and I write a personal note that's very specific to that event. It's not a template, cut and paste. I'm like very, very specific about citing what I enjoyed doing with that person.
I love that. What you were just describing, it sort of reminds me of a little bit of what we had chatted with Pete Baker about in season two around, you know, building your own brand. And I think one of those sort of personal brand touch points that sometimes people forget is, or maybe they don't know about as they're starting out, is like those little touches that, you know, you can do yourself for a client, like giving them a from the heart handwritten note, sending them chocolates, sending them, you know, stickers along with something. Like it's those little things, I think, that really help to help someone remember who you are. And like, it's delightful. It's like, oh, you took time to, you know, give me this little thing. You didn't have to, but you did. And that's going to like just endear me to you and like want to recommend you and hopefully work with you again. So I don't know. It's just when you were talking about that, it's like I always think of those little moments of just like delight or like, oh, that's so sweet. You didn't have to do that, but I love that. And I'm probably going to, you know, purchase from you again.
Yeah,
you
know? It makes such a big difference. And I've actually had my clients give me gifts. Like, oh my goodness, that really means something. That you paid me my full rate.
Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't, I don't typically have clients that scoff at pricing. I mean, it still happens occasionally, but then to get there and then they give me a gift, I'm like, oh my gosh, you go into it with a generous feeling.
I love that. I love generosity. So
yeah. And I can do my best work.
Yes, absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. Well, I love that. I love. Did you have more?
No, I mean, I am ready to talk about. I took a whole list of software.
Yes.
While we were talking.
Okay. Smart.
And I heard you mention a lot of them. I do not know what ClickUp is. Do I need to look that up?
You don't need to. There's so many different project management softwares. And honestly, you know, on our website, you know, where we have a list of all of our episodes, for this particular episode, we'll kind of do, you know, the master roundup of the things that, you know, we use in our kind of day to day. Really, for me, the main things that I use software wise are like, I mean, I have a subscription to Adobe Creative Cloud, both personal, and then I also use it through work, and they provide the subscription there. And, you know, it's got everything I need. It's got After Effects, Illustrator, InDesign, Photoshop. Those are usually the apps that I'm in on day to day. I do use Figma quite a lot. So Figma is another sort of a mix of a design tool, generally for product design, but it can be used for a lot of different types of design. Like also for After Effects, I can use it to create illustrated assets, push those into After Effects and kind of work seamlessly from there. I think they have a new feature now where you can also do deck design, which is fun. So Figma's great. And then like Google Cloud, like Google Apps, you know, Slide Decks. I'm in Slide Decks too much of the time, to be honest. Google Docs, just to get my thoughts out. For kind of the freelancing side of things, I use Wave. So Wave is kind of a invoicing and payments platform, which I find it, you know, pretty easy to use. My freelancing is maybe like, you know, 15-20% of what I do in a year. So I'm not in it a whole lot, but I do like it for what it is. And yeah, I'm sure I'll have more. Just, you know, check out the website, check out this episode to kind of get that full list. But anything that pops to mind for you, Yan, of like the day-to-day kind of tech that you're in? So I heard you say Procreate. I love Procreate.
Yeah. I'm using Procreate 90% of the time.
It's so good.
I use Illustrator. Mm-hmm. Gotta have Adobe Acrobat because your clients are gonna send you agreements, or you're gonna pop up and wanna hold somebody accountable for getting a signature on your side. Mm-hmm. So I would highly recommend having some kind of Adobe software for doing that, for processing PDFs. I think that's about it. Yeah. I've really moved away from that technical stuff. Like sure. I said, I'm leaving that to the pros like you to do. Don't ask me for a logo.
No, that's awesome. I honestly like that approach. I wish I could do that. Yan knows this about me by now. I like to just sort of collect software. Like I'll hear about.
You're a hoarder.
I am a hoarder. I'm a software hoarder. I literally, on this MacBook, I have so many like apps that I don't even use. I need to uninstall them. But I like to just sort of see what's out there and figure like, oh, is it actually useful? There is like one. This is completely random. It's like a calculator app. It's called Numi. I'll link to it on our website. And I like it because you can do like complex equations or just like, you know, put in a bunch of numbers, like you're trying to figure out, oh, what's the cost of something? Add it, divide it, subtract it. It's just like a calculator on steroids, which is really nice. But that's like one little tiny app.
I've never heard of that. I would just think like, do I need to split up our lunch check by seven ways and who's owing
what? Exactly. That's how you would do it. Instead of going in the regular calculator
Venmo
app, we have
me.
To do it. Yes. Yes. Super. So stuff like that that's actually useful. I try to collect that. But in terms of like sort of, you know, just practical software, I mean, there's so much stuff out there. And like, you know, for people listening, just find what works for you. Everybody is going to recommend you something else. Mm-hmm. And I think what is nice about this episode is like Yan and I are talking about the things that work for us. And like, you know, that's for you to listen to and potentially try out. And if you find something better, then use that. You know, use whatever is good for your workflow. I don't know. There's always so many different pieces of software out there, and everybody wants, you know, to be the best at, you know, doing this.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know. You just have to do it for yourself and figure out what works, you know.
And the industry calls for something, right?
Yeah.
The industry says, oh, you should use this software. You should be using the most expensive or the latest version.
God.
And the difficulty with that is that when you're a student or you're emerging, you don't have the means to pay for that subscription, especially now that everything is cloud-based and they want to hold on to your assets. And you may not even have the latest laptop or tablet ability to have the latest software. And what I would say is you just make it work until you can upgrade.
Absolutely.
And don't stress about it, because I mean, every medium has its hangups,
yes,
right? So you could be drawing on paper, but you could also digitally scan, you can vectorize, you can do all those things.
Yeah.
It might just not happen immediately.
That's right.
Right.
Exactly.
Do what you can while you can right now, and then upgrade when you're able to, like, who has a student or an institution subscription to Adobe?
Right.
Ask around. Maybe somebody has an extra license. I mean, I would ask rather than trying to stress through whatever that subscription fee is.
Absolutely.
Right now.
Do your best. Because, it's like, no, you're completely right. Because I even remember when I was, you know, in school, like, I couldn't afford Adobe. You know, I couldn't afford a subscription to all that. And I mean, I'll be honest, I was doing a little bit of pirating, you know.
We don't condone pirating.
We don't condone pirating. Please don't. Stay safe, stay legal. But like at the time, you know. But you're completely right. And, you know, there are also a lot of either free or almost free alternatives
similar
to a lot of softwares. Yeah, which is something we can also list on the website when it comes to design software. The ones that I had in mind have vanished. I should have written them down, but that's fine.
Everyone seems to be on the Canva wagon.
Oh, that's right, Canva.
And you can kind of tell when it's Canva, which is fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
But
it's good to learn. So,
how would you feel, though, Hafsa, if somebody was like, I could do this job,
and
then you saw it was a Canva template? You'd be like, charging.
I have to be kinder than necessary. So.
Okay. I'm just saying, if some of you are out there designing on Canva, there are other people
Yes.
Yeah.
Like me. No.
Do it better.
Judging you slightly, but it's fine.
Do it better.
Do it better.
It's fine. I mean, community newsletters.
Yes.
You want to put out a yard sign or something.
Well, also, this is not to continue on Canva, but the nice thing with Canva is like you can create it. So the way that you can set up templates in Canva is really handy if you're working with non-designers.
That's
because
right.
You can sort of quality control mm-hmm. layouts. Mm. So it's like if you have particular brand assets, you have a logo that you don't want to be, you know, totally squished.
That's right.
In a slide deck, then you can just lock it down and like, uh-huh. here's this template. Have fun.
Fill this part
yeah,
in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
oh,
there's
that's
some
a good
value.
Use. Yeah. I never thought about it that way.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's things.
That's cool.
We make it work.
Yeah.
I never even talked about like, you know, terms and like practices specific to like my industry. I think you talked a little bit about like specific things in terms of graphic recording. I guess in terms of, you know, when I say acronyms. So, for example, I didn't know anything about marketing when I started working as a creative within a marketing organization. Mm-hmm. And I still remember one of the first like all hands marketing meetings that I was in at my company. Within like the first, I want to say 15 minutes, I had heard like 10 different acronyms that people were just using in conversation.
Uh-huh.
And I had no idea what they were saying. So I was like in the corner, like frantically, writing things down.
That's and, such like, a bad feeling.
And it was like, it was nice at the time because like my company was very, like people would educate you. Like if you had mm-hmm. questions, you were free to ask questions. But I was definitely at that point where I was like, I don't want to look dumb. I'm just going to write this down and Google it later.
Yeah.
So
that's smart.
So just like, you know, be aware, you know, every industry probably has a version of that. Tech probably more than some, mm-hmm. but you know, I'm sure wherever you go, you're going to encounter, you know, lots of different words that have different meanings or that have invented meanings. And so, you know, you sort of have to learn the language of the industry that you're in. And I think one thing I would recommend too is to like not fall into the trap of just using that sort of invented corporate language every day
in your everyday
in your everyday life. Yeah, because nobody knows what you're saying. That doesn't no that's leave it at work.
Just yeah, at that's work. That's probably the best point that we've made all episode. Yeah. don't be that person. I do want to ask you, piggybacking on that episode with Lynette. Mm-hmm. Thinking we were just talking about this again, the value of our time and what we do.
Yeah.
When do your billable hours start?
Mm-hmm.
How do you gauge that?
I'll be embarrassed to say. So for the freelance, my freelance side of work, I'm embarrassed to say I'm still a little bit loosey goosey when it comes to my billable hours. But what I do typically do is I will have a contract, and depending on what type of project it is, I either have, and we talked about this with Lynette, we either have an hourly rate or I have a day rate, because oftentimes the scope of the project might be a little bit different from, mm-hmm. you know, on a case by case basis.
Sure.
And what I'll kind of do is set up like based on an estimate of, oh, I know that, you know, developing an explainer, for example, takes me a certain, you know, amount of time from start to finish, from, you know, from storyboarding to getting it reviewed to, you know, making sure it's finalized and then to animation. Like, I know that this is going to take somewhere in the vicinity of, you know, say three to five weeks, something like that.
Mm.
And then I ascribe either a day rate or an hourly rate, depending on if it's like, you know, a 30-second explainer or if it's, you know, something over 2 minutes. So that part of things is still a little bit loosey-goosey to me. And I will say the reason for that is because I freelance so sporadically. Like the majority mm-hmm. of my work is, you know, as a salaried employee with an organization where I don't have to think about any of that. But I do typically do kind of the hourly or a day rate kind of approach.
Okay. I am doing an hourly, half day, or full day okay. for graphic recording. Mm-hmm. Hourly means that my first hour is always that initial work hour that is the highest rate. That gets me mm-hmm. to the place.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's in state, it is in the high three figures.
Okay.
Actually, in county, it's in the high three figures.
Okay.
If it's outside of the county, it's in the low four figures.
Okay.
Then if I'm traveling to a place, I charge a flat rate. And the reason I do that is because I don't want clients to hem and haw over what flight I'm taking. I always try to take the most economical flight, but I've told myself this year, I'm not taking that connection flight that gets me home at 1 a.m. anymore. Ooh, I did that too much last year.
No red eyes. No.
And after working a really long day, I would go to the airport. And then I remember one time I was speed walking through Atlanta and I literally got out of my plane, sped walked to the next gate and just got I just went right into the line for my seat section because I didn't even have time to sit or get a drink.
No.
Like I sped walked for 12 minutes right into the next plane.
That's my nightmare.
And I don't want to do that anymore. Mm. So I don't tell the client what my accommodations or any of that is. It's all in one flat rate.
That's smart.
And in order for me to travel, it's going to be four figures. And I don't take a deposit. I don't take a 50% deposit. Yep. Some contracts or agreements will call for that. And a client may be like, well, this is our practice and I'm fine with that. And yeah, it covers the flight and my travel before that. Mm-hmm. If I'm doing a multi-day engagement, I'm going to book out the day before for travel and then the day after for travel. And then those start to creep into the five figures.
Okay.
So you really have to gauge the loss of time that you would have worked the day before, the day after. And then, I don't even consider it like this is time that I'm working. It's just time that I can't work for somebody else.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's how I bill.
It's that gap in between the actual production.
Mm-hmm.
No, that totally makes sense.
Yeah.
And I like that approach too. I think it's something, hopefully, that it makes sense for you. It's something that it's easy for you to articulate, number one. And then number two, it's easy for you to do and just like, you know, kind of scale it from project to project. And it's easy for the client to understand, I assume. So,
yeah, I hope so. I really break it down in the proposal. And I always say included is travel, accommodations, meals, taxes, fees, ride shares, day before and day after travel time.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, you know, I've spelled it all out for them.
It's all there in the contract. It's very important to list all the requirements and caveats, all the fine print, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the contract.
It's all there. Yep.
Hold on. I have a question before. So we're starting to kind of get to the end of things here. This is like, I don't know, maybe I just enjoy talking with Yen, but this has been really fun.
Just
I don't know.
Flew by.
It really flew by.
Maybe it's this awesome new room.
And maybe it is. It's just the vibes in here. The vibes are immaculate.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to ask, this is a little bit of, you know, an abstract question, but it came about because, like, you know, we've been seeing, you know, in the news in terms of, you know, the job landscape for creatives, you know,
mm-hmm.
There's different things. I won't say that there's a lot of turmoil, but there's definitely been a lot of changes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've seen things like AI is a big part of the conversation. There's been a lot of layoffs in tech. There's been a lot of uncertainty for, you know, people who are freelancers, who are artists of, you know, all different, you know, mediums. So I guess one question that I have kind of in general, and we'll pose this to all of our guests, is what's on the horizon for your industry? You know, if you were to look forward, you know, take a snapshot and, you know, say 2 years or 5 years or 10 years, what do you think graphic recording will look like?
Yeah. Oh, that's a really great question. I was asked this question by a couple of people recently. What happens when AI overtakes your job? And my immediate pushback was that I work with a majority of nonprofit organizations that are incredibly human-centered. And we're talking about the most basic human rights, just in thinking about personhood. If there is something that is incredibly sensitive or nuanced and someone is crying in the room, someone is angry, your AI bot is not going to know not to record that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to know that the last thing that was just said was incredibly offensive or painful or harmful. Whereas a human like me is going to pick up on the nuances or the human idiosyncrasies. Mm-hmm. I just saw the most ridiculous and hilarious thing on Instagram. This woman ordered a coloring book, and it was images of cats in gardens.
Okay.
And what had happened is the first couple pages were so adorable and detailed. And the later pages, the cats had, I don't know, fangs, seven arms, amorphous bodies that were wrapped around their heads just and like part of the chair. And it was so ridiculous. Oh, and God. It was like, what did AI do to the coloring book landscape? Like, we can't even order a base. I get it. People want to monetize from the comfort sure. of their chair, but there's no humanity in that whatsoever. Like, nobody wants to color a seven-legged cat. I mean, maybe you do, but it just was not a soothing kind of experience. I was just cracking up and crying.
Those are not cozy vibes at all.
Not cozy, calming vibes. So we need humans.
Yes.
We need humans to be the drivers behind the big ideas, yeah. the details, the caring,
yes.
The soft handoff. Like, when I hand off my work to a client, I'm very much like handshake, hug, yeah. eye contact. And if you're able to do those things, that's what imparts your client with mm-hmm. that last moment feeling, right?
Absolutely.
That's how you close up the job. So yeah. Hafsa, what are you doing in a couple of years from now? What does it look like for you?
That's a really good question. We'll see. Maybe I'll be programming ChatGPT bots. God, I hope not. I really hope not. But it's been, you know, high on my mind, especially, you know, seeing some of, you know, my friends and colleagues whose their work has been a little bit impacted by, you know, companies that normally would hire, you know, real people to be, you know, VFX artists or animators or graphic designers. And sometimes companies are like, oh yeah, we can just kind of outsource that to something, or, you know, we can plug it into Midjourney and do something. And I've seen a lot of like Midjourney, like clearly AI generated ads and pieces of, you know, marketing material out there, and I'm like, somebody's having fun back there. And you know, I think it's gonna, in the corporate world, it's going to depend a lot on leadership, mm-hmm. not just, you know, the leaders of the business, the CEOs and whatnot, but also just like, you know, in a lot of cases, the marketing leaders. You know, they have to sort of make an intentional decision of investing in humans who are skilled at their jobs, who are skilled at design and design communication, mm-hmm. Or, you know, maybe they'll make the investment elsewhere and say, hey, we want to save a little bit of money and we want to go about generating things. And the hard thing with, you know, with tech design, with marketing orgs, even, you know, with product design, I would be curious to see how AI is affecting the product design world. Because, you know, again, and a little bit to your point, it's one of those realms that it needs to be human centric, because mm-hmm. product designers are designing interfaces and experiences for other people. And you need a human mind to do that kind of research to yes. understand, like, how do people use things? How do people interact? What are, you know, what are those nuances? And AI doesn't always get nuances,
no.
as we can see.
It don't.
Doesn't always get the details right.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to be very curious, you know, to see what happens. I feel lucky in that it hasn't affected me just yet. In fact, I have been able to leverage AI in some ways for my work. And I'll be specific about that, where it's like, mainly it's for scripting. Like, I will use ChatGPT as a little bit of a scripting coach. So for After Effects, there are things that you can do that are basically enabled by like JavaScript and math and writing expressions. And I suck at expressions because I'm terrible at math. And so I'll go into ChatGPT and I'll be like, hey, can you help me write an expression to, you know, make a really cool loop cycle, or to automate something that okay. normally would take me, you know, maybe 30 minutes to figure out. And with ChatGPT, I can do it maybe in 15, because, mm-hmm. you know, we can kind of work through the code together. So there are like, there's utility to it, mm-hmm. At least where it comes to some elements of design. But it's not something that I would be comfortable, you know, as a leader saying, oh yeah, we can just have a robot do all of this, because I can't see that. the output of that looking great.
Right, right. I like that you're saying utility. I think it's important to say what is the actual usefulness of something, right? Not just to have a blanket AI everything.
No. They can't replace people just yet. We're still out here. You still need the organic mind.
Hold off Skynet. Yeah. On the next episode.
Yes. On the next episode.
We don't know who the next
episode. Know who the next episode is.
So we'll edit this part
out. But I think we can vamp a little bit. We're kind of coming to the end of our conversation here. This has been really fun. Like, I love already kind of the direction that we're on with this season. And I'm really, really excited to dig in with some of our next guests to figure out, like, what do they do and how do you do it and get into that nitty gritty.
It'll be like career day for me. Really will. Sit back and put my feet up.
Exactly. Get my popcorn. You can have popcorn here, right? I think so. Totally.
We'll have to find out.
We'll have to find out. Please stay tuned for our next episode. In the meantime, thanks for sticking with us. I hope you learned something new, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you so much.
If you like this podcast, be sure to heart, like, and subscribe to Cadence wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at @CadencePod. Or check out our episodes and more at thecadencepod.com. While we are proudly based in Ypsilanti, Michigan, we are recording out of Fifth Avenue Studios in Ann Arbor at Ann Arbor District Library. And we hope wherever you're creating from in the world, you are marching to your own cadence. Thanks for listening.